The Queen cannot help feeling that our isolation is dangerous. Queen Victoria, January 14, 1896. Isolation is much less dangerous than the danger of being dragged into wars which do not concern us. Lord Salisbury, 1896. For as long as he had served the Queen, Lord Salisbury had sought to keep Britain free of power blocks. His policy was not one of isolation from Europe, but isolation from the Europe of alliances. Britannia would rule the waves, but stay out of Europe's quarrels. Said Salisbury, "We are fish." When the Queen called him to form a new government for the third time in 1895, Lord Salisbury pursued his old policy of splendid isolation. But in the years since he and Disraeli had traveled to the Congress of Berlin in 1878 to create with Bismarck a new balance of power in Europe, their world had vanished. In the Sino-Japanese War of 1894 to 1895, Japan defeated China, seized Taiwan, and occupied the Liaodong Peninsula. Britain's preeminent position in China was now history. In the summer of 1895, London received a virtual ultimatum from Secretary of State Richard Olney, demanding that Great Britain accept U.S. arbitration in a border dispute between British Guiana and Venezuela. Lord Salisbury shredded Olney's note like an impatient tenured professor cutting up a freshman term paper. But President Cleveland demanded that Britain accept arbitration or face the prospect of war with the United States. The British were stunned by American enthusiasm for a war over a patch of South American jungle and incredulous. America deployed two battleships to Britain's 44. Yet Salisbury took the threat seriously. A war with America in the not-distant future has become something more than a possibility. London was jolted anew in January 1896 when the Kaiser sent a telegram of congratulations to Boer leader Paul Kruger on his capture of the Jameson raiders, who had invaded the Transvaal in a land grab concocted by Cecil Rhodes with the connivance of Colonial Secretary Joseph Chamberlain. These two challenges from a jingoistic America that was now the first economic power on Earth, and from his bellicose nephew in Berlin, Wilhelm II, revealed to the future Edward VII that his country was without a friend in the world, and steps to end British isolation were required. On December 18, 1897, a Russian fleet steamed into the Chinese harbor of Port Arthur, obliging British warships to vacate the area. British jingoes became apoplectic. Lord Salisbury stood down. "I don't think we carry enough guns to fight them and the French together." In 1898, a crisis erupted in Northeast Africa. Captain Jean-Baptiste Marchand, who had set off from Gabon in 1897 on a safari across the Sahara with six officers and 120 Senegalese, appeared at Fashoda in the southern Sudan, where he laid claim to the headwaters of the Nile. Sir Herbert Kitchener cruised upriver to instruct Marchand he was on imperial land. Faced with superior firepower, Marchand withdrew. Fashoda brought Britain and France to the brink of war. Paris backed down, but bitterness ran deep. Caught up in the Anglophobia was 8-year-old Charles de Gaulle. In 1900, the Russian challenge reappeared. After American, British, French, German, and Japanese troops had marched to the rescue of the diplomatic legation in Peking, besieged for 55 days by Chinese rebels called Boxers, Russia exploited the chaos to send a 200,000-man army into Manchuria, and the Tsar shifted a squadron of his Baltic fleet to Port Arthur. The British position in China was now threatened by Russia and Japan. But what awakened Lord Salisbury to the depth of British isolation was the Boer War. When it broke out in 1899, Europeans and Americans cheered British defeats, While Joe Chamberlain might speak of the British enjoying a splendid isolation, surrounded and supported by our kinsfolk, the Boer War brought home the reality that, fully extended in their imperial role, the British needed to avoid conflict with the other great powers. Only among America's Anglophile elite could Victoria's nation or Salisbury's government find support. When Burke Cochrane, a Tammany Hall Democrat, who wrote President McKinley urging him to mediate and keep America's distance from Great Britain's wanton acts of aggression, the letter went to Secretary of State John Hay. Hay bridled at this Celtic insolence. "Mr. Cochrane's logic is especially Irish," he wrote to a friend. "As long as I stay here, no action shall be taken contrary to my conviction that the one indispensable feature of our foreign policy should be a friendly understanding with England." Hay refused even to answer Burke Cochrane's fool letter to the president. Hay spoke of an alliance with Britain as an unattainable dream and hoped for a smashing imperial victory in South Africa. "I hope, if it comes to blows, that England will make quick work of Uncle Paul Kruger,"